Greetings, everyone. It is just after 8 p.m. on Friday, July 1st, 2011. How's it going? I am walking through a, I wouldn't say reasonably crowded. I guess it's probably not so reasonably crowded. Times Square, in the famous New York City. Perhaps you've heard of it. And it's 4th of July weekend, so this is usually a time where people get out of town. But of course, you know, it still attracts some tourists and whatnot. I'm planning on coming back here on July 4 with my boy Jacob to watch the fireworks. You know, Melanie's stuck in bed rest, so you know, she can't really go anywhere. She's not really a city person anyway, so I figured let me take this opportunity. Ooh, I almost got hit by a backed up car. Manny, I almost became the second person on the overnight escape underground to get hit by a car. Live as we spoke. Car was backing up through a crosswalk as I was crossing. Anywho. But, you know, it's a gorgeous night. Not too humid for the Northeast, but humid enough, warm enough. Oh, look, it's Mickey Mouse waving hi to children. But I am here. I'm actually on my way home because I just went to the Harry Potter, the exhibition, which is being exhibited, I guess is the best word for it, now through September of 2011, and is at the Discovery Time Theater, Discovery Time Square, which is, it's a museum, but it's right there in the theater district, over on West 44th Street. If you know where Carmine's is in that area, it's like two doors down from Carmine's. It's right across the street from the Schubert Theater. Restaurant Row, I think, is right around that area. There's that alley of restaurants and whatnot by the Schubert Theater. This is right across the street from that. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about this exhibit. I went with my friend Stacy, and she and my wife Melanie were supposed to go. However, since of course you know my wife is on bed rest and is not allowed to leave the house, so going to this exhibit was not in her cards, and so I went in Melanie's stead. And Stacy actually had tickets to go see a show after that, so she had to hightail it to her show. I stayed around the gift shops for a little bit and purchased some chocolate frogs for my wife and my son, as well as a guide to the exhibit, which I'm going to go through and share with you. The humble and I'm not going to call you ignorant listener, as some other podcasters I know, for I know my listeners are not ignorant. But I'm headed down to the PATH train on my way back to New Jersey, where my car is parked in downtown Newark, New Jersey, at my place of work, that being Kaplan Medical. One of my many places of work, but I've got a parking pass to park there for free. For the moment, it actually belongs to my wife, but since she's on bed rest, she's not going to be needing it, and other people are going to be needing it. So while I still have it, I might as well take advantage of it. So, anywho, I'm going to talk to you all about this exhibit in just a moment, as soon as I get on the train, basically. In the meantime, if you're not familiar at all with the Harry Potter movies or the books, I would definitely recommend you get acquainted with both of them. Certainly the books, of course, because the books are vastly, very highly entertaining, great for kids of all ages, I really have to say. They're a modern day mythology, and we need these big phenomena every now and then, and it's a lot of, I think, important values that are taught throughout this story, and it's all about love and friendship in the end when you come to think about it. And but if you haven't read the books, at least see the movies so you understand what these stories are and understand all the little fascinating intricacies that are built up around them. The films, I think are pretty decent adaptations. I know a lot of people have problems with them, you know, if you're true bibliophiles, I guess. But, you know, having adapted a book into a screenplay myself, I can tell you that it is certainly not an easy task by any means. And you really cannot make a direct... You can't shoot a book, basically, because it would actually... It might be entertaining, but I think in the long run it would probably end up being kind of boring because it would be way too long. I mean, this last book, of course, people may know, was split into two films, the second of which comes out in just a few weeks. And certainly, you know, there's a book like Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, which is the fourth book of the series, which is the largest book of the series. And was actually one of the shorter films of the movies. So some people have issues with that there was so much omitted. But, you know, you can't make every film adaptation a two-parter. So, but, anyhow, I highly suggest just check out these movies and books. Check them both out. Read the books first, then see the movies. And, hey, if you want to catch... Deathly Hallows Part 2 in theaters, you have a few weeks to read all of the books and watch all of the movies. Yes, that's a lot of reading and a lot of movie watching, but what is this? It's not entirely impossible to do so. I'm sorry, I'm walking by these huge trucks of something, I don't know. Some sort of compressors. I don't know what they're here for. They're generators, I guess. Very, very loud. I apologize, but hey, it's New York City. What do you expect? I was going to pause, but I'm almost at the path. I'll give you a brief overview of what the story of Harry Potter is, in case you don't know anything about Harry Potter. Harry Potter, the story itself, an 11-year-old boy, in England, in Surrey, I believe, has lived with his aunt and uncle all of his life, and his cousin Dudley, who is basically the same age as Harry, but the parents dote on Dudley and kind of hate Harry. They make him live in the cupboard in the, you know, his broom closet under the stairs, basically. And they treat him with great disdain, and he's never quite sure why. He knows that his parents were dead, and then he soon finds out why. He finds out that his parents were wizards, and that he too is a wizard, that he possesses magical powers. And he is invited to go to a school, Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, where he learns the arts of magic. And he also learns that what actually happened to his parents, that around the time of his birth, there was a dark lord, a dark wizard who became the most powerful wizard ever, Lord Voldemort. A wizard so powerful you can't even say his name. So they constantly refer to him as he who must not be named, or simply as you know who. And, his parents had fought the dark wizards and ended up being killed by you know who. And then the wizard went to kill Harry himself. However, something very interesting happened. His mother had cast a spell of love, a very powerful magic that protected Harry and made the killing spell that Voldemort tried to cast backfire. And as that happened, a scar was burned onto Harry's head, and it sort of marked Harry as, you know, He became the boy who lived. The one who could not be killed by Voldemort. And of course, naturally, his destiny was to learn the arts of witchcraft and wizardry and find out what he needed to do to defeat Lord Voldemort. And of course, he needed some help from his friends. Ron Weasley, his best mate, who... became his, Ron came from a very large wizarding family, lots of brothers and one sister. The sister, whom we find out later on, becomes a love interest for Harry. But they became sort of his adopted family. And then there's Hermione Granger, who is actually born of Muggle parents. Muggles are non-magical people. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes there are wizards or witches who are born of Muggles. And sometimes there are squibs, which are children born of magical people, but they are kind of Muggles, actually. They don't have any magical powers. But anywho, so his friends constantly help him learn all the things he needs to learn, and eventually, well, I don't want to spoil anything for you if you haven't read the last book, so you'll just have to find out how it all ends. But that's about all I'm going to talk about for now. I need to find a bathroom before I get on this train, and then I'll talk to you all soon, and I'll tell you all about this exhibition. Okay. 8:28 p.m. and now on board the Port Authority Trans-Hudson Line, otherwise known as the PATH train. And I'm going to go through the official exhibition guide, which is the book that tells you all about the exhibit, which I wanted to buy, number one, for Melanie so she could get a chance to see this. Number two, since I wanted to tell you all about it, and probably could not remember everything that I saw here. But first, when you go into the exhibit, you have two different ticket options. There's just the main exhibit, but then you could also buy the option for the audio tour, where they give you this little thing that, you know, kind of works like a cell phone, but it's long and kind of triangular-ish. But at each different part of the exhibit, there's things, there's like audio tags that you can listen to. And you basically just enter a number and it gives you some background information, you know, narrated by people who worked on the films. Mainly the prop masters and wardrobe designers and whatnot, with interesting tidbits about how they came up with a certain prop or costume. And you know, different factors that were used and whatnot. So before you go in, you are greeted by an actress, basically, who is there with a sorting hat, and she selects three volunteers to sort into different houses. At Hogwarts, there were four different houses: Gryffindor, which is where Harry, Ron, and Hermione were in; Slytherin, which is where most of the dark wizards came from. Didn't mean that if you were in Slytherin, you were a bad person, but no dark wizard ever came from any other house, as far as I know. And then there's Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff, and they were each named after the four founders of Hogwarts. So then, after the three volunteers, you were taken to this room where there's eight video screens, which each had the poster from each movie up on the screen. The last one, I think, was just a teaser trailer for part two. No real images or anything. And then they play this very short little montage of the films and whatnot. Then after that, you're taken. This door opens up and you're greeted by the Hogwarts Express, which is the train that the children all take from London to Hogwarts. From there you go into different sections, each with parts of, you know, different parts, sets from the film, basically. You're taken first into the Gryffindor Common Room, which is, of course, the House of Gryffindor. It's where all the kids would hang out, and you saw different paintings all along the walls, different portrait galleries. Some of them were moving, most of them were stationary, but they did have some video portraits, which were kind of cool. And you know, different costumes and props and scenery. There's a post, basically a board where they had notes posted. I don't really remember that from the movies, but apparently it was in the movies. They had a Quidditch board game. I think that was actually, I saw that later on in the exhibit. I didn't see that in the common room area, but let's see here. I'm just going through the guide here. Yeah, this book doesn't exactly show the same order in which the tour was. But you get to the boys' dormitory, where you have Ron's bed and Harry's bed, and the adjacent belongings, basically, the closets and whatnot, and different wardrobes. You had the golden egg, which is retrieved by Harry Potter from the Hungarian Horntail during the first attack of the Triwizard Tournament. You had Ron Weasley's trunk, which include his broken wand, copies of Seeker Weekly, Ron's different memorabilia from Ron's favorite Quidditch team, the Chudley Cannons, the howler that his mom sends. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, you need to read these books and see these movies. I'm not going to explain everything. Then you had a section where you go through each of Hogwarts' classes. You had the potions class, and you had Professor Snape's wardrobe, as well as Professor Slughorn's wardrobe. You had different items that were all in the classroom. You had the divination room, which was Professor Trelawney's classroom. You had a crystal ball, and they were talking about one of the films where Hermione knocks the crystal ball over and they had to roll down, and of course you can't do that with real crystal, so they had to make a rubber ball, and they had challenges with that because the rubber ball kept bouncing like a children's rubber ball, and so they had to figure out a way to weight it down but yet still have it be rubber. So that was kind of cool. And you had the herbology room, where they actually had, now most of the things at this place you could not touch, of course. They asked you not to touch any of the costumes or wardrobe, and but every now and then there was something that they wanted you to touch. One of the things that they wanted to do, for example, was to pull on the mandrakes. They had a handful of, you know, mandrakes, in which you pull them up, and of course when you pull them out of the ground, they shriek. So that was pretty cool. You had the Defense Against the Dark Arts class. You had a whole section on Gilderoy Lockhart, several of his costumes, all of the books that he had written, the different photographs and portraits and whatnot. They had a model of a Cornish pixie. So that was all pretty good. You also had the Defense Against the Dark Arts from the Lupin era, where you had the boggart, the casket of the wardrobe where the boggart was kept. You had the big jack-in-the-box that the boggart turned into, as well as you had everybody's wand. Any wand that you saw in the films were in this film. Were in this exhibit, rather. So that's pretty cool. Oh, and the bogger closet actually had sounds of the bogger inside trying to get out, which is kind of cool. Then you had the office of Dolores Umbridge, complete with her pink costume and the curtains and all the plates with all the cats and kittens on it, as well as the book that she used, Dark Arts Defense Basic for Beginners. They talked about the design of that book. They had the magic quill in which Harry had to write, "I must not tell lies," as well as that parchment. A little photograph of Cornelius Fudge. And then you had the Quidditch area. Now, I'll explain Quidditch a little bit. Quidditch is basically the main sport in the Wizarding World. It's basically kind of like a combination of soccer and basketball. There's four balls. There's the quaffle. And the idea is you have to throw the quaffle through these hoops to score points. You've got bludgers, which are two balls that are basically designed to knock other players off their broomsticks. Yeah, the game's played in the air on broomsticks. And then there's the golden snitch, and the team that catches the golden snitch, you know, gets 50 points. And usually that means you win the game, unless you have less than, you know, unless you're behind by less than 50 points, in which case the game is still over and you would lose the game. But they had all of the props there. They actually had a little, you know, quaffle set, like, you know, kind of like if you go to
some sort of arcade, and you have, like, basketball things where you can, like, throw a basketball or throw a football through a hoop. They actually had quaffles and hoops where you can throw quaffles through the hoop, so I did that. That was pretty cool. I actually got to pick up a quaffle and throw it through the hoop. Yeah, the different broomsticks that were used in the game. They had the Nimbus 2000, the Nimbus 2001, all the Quidditch uniforms, Madame Pomfrey's robes, all the different paraphernalia from the Quidditch World Cup, and the binoculars. Then you had Hagrid's Hut. There's an area where you actually walk into what looks like Hagrid's Hut, and inside you see the wardrobe that Robbie Coltrane wore, which I have to say, I mean, you know, I imagine that they did some trick photography to make him look bigger, but this wardrobe was definitely giant size. I mean, I don't know if Robbie Coltrane, they say that he actually wore these. I don't know if he was walking on stilts or what. I've got to find out about that, but yeah, it's quite amazing. I can't believe that this guy is actually that big. I got to look that up. I don't know how big Robbie Coltrane is. But they had a model of the hippogriff, Buckbeak, which is kind of cool. Because a lot of times, even though a lot of these characters, you know, these things were CGI, they did actually use models on set as a reference, and there's something that the actors could interact with. So it's cool. They had the Monster Book of Monsters, which they had a couple of those on display. Hagrid's chair was one of the things that you were allowed to actually sit on. You could actually touch that, so that was kind of cool, sitting on this huge chair. Then you have the Forbidden Forest. They had models of some of the centaurs, the horn-tailed dragon. They had a baby Thestral. Let's see here. Yeah, the Hungarian horn-tailed dragon. They had the head of that, basically. Then you had a room telling about the dark forces. And they had all the costumes for all the dark wizards, known as the Death Eaters. They had the Angel of Death statue, where Harry was kept prison when Voldemort had returned to physical form. They had a Dementor, of course. They had some of the Azkaban robes, including Bellatrix Lestrange's prison uniform worn by Helena Bonham Carter. They had a reference model of the house elf creature. They had Voldemort's robes. They had a petrified Colin Creevy. They actually had, they made a model of this boy. Hugh Mitchell was the actor, who gets petrified in the second movie. So they showed him. They had some of the Horcruxes there. Tom Riddle's diary. They had Helga Hufflepuff's cup. Of course, they had Lord Voldemort's wand. Then you walk to the Great Hall after this, and on the way there's a wall with all the educational decrees from Order of the Phoenix that Dolores Umbridge has put up. And you walk into the Great Hall, which I have to say is not quite as big as what the Great Hall from Hogwarts must have been like. But they had all artifacts. They had a whole section on the Winter Ball, all the costumes and props from that. They did have candles suspended from the ceiling, which was kind of cool. They had some of the professor's robes there. They had a couple of Dumbledore's robes. They had Professor McGonagall's Winter Ball robes. They had the Goblet of Fire, of course, and all the parchment names that were entered into the Triwizard Cup, basically. They didn't have the Goblet of Fire. They had the casket in which the Goblet of Fire was kept, but they did have the Triwizard Cup. Of course, they had in this room also all of the different candies, like the chocolate frogs and the every flavor beans and all the different things, exploding bonbons, all sorts of things like that. Let's see, what else? Different people who were involved in the games in the Goblet of Fire. Victor Crumb's uniform, Flora Delacour's uniform. They had Sirius Black's robes on display here. They had Phoenix, the Phoenix Fox, which is Dumbledore's Phoenix. And, of course, Ron Weasley's Winter Ball robes, which were, you know, hand-me-downs from an ancient ancestor. Hermione's earrings, which I actually didn't catch as, but I see these here in the book. And that is basically it. Harry's glasses, I know at one point, were in the exhibit. But, you know, if you're a fan of the books and the movies, which, you know, if you're a fan of the books, I assume you're a fan of the movies, and you got some time and you're going to be in the New York area before September, get on over to Times Square. Check this place out. It's pretty cool. My wife and I are looking forward to seeing the last film. We're actually going to try to get tickets. Yes, this is the one occasion where she's allowed to leave the house to see Harry Potter. So we're actually going to try to catch a double feature where they're going to show parts one and part two in the same night. So check your local listings if you're interested in seeing something like that. But, you know, well, you know, that's all I got to say about that in the immortal words of Forrest Gump. So I will leave you with this. And hey, you had two episodes of the Brian Jude Show out in 1 week after several weeks of not recording. So I think that's pretty nifty. I don't know. I guess that's it. I'll talk to y'all when I see you. Check out, of course, the Overnightscape Underground, especially the Overnightscape Central, coming out every Monday. Oh, I have to record something for that. I should remember. What was this week's topic? You know, I'm going to have to go back and listen to it, because I was driving when I was listening to it, so I didn't get the chance to write it down. But I'm usually on that every week, and if I can't be on it, I'll email my submissions to the great PQ River. Check out all the other great hosts here on the Overnightscape Underground. And I don't know. Hope you have a great 4th of July, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.